Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Giribhadra Dhari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Giribhadra Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana. Yamuna Tira Lana Chari. Yamuna Tira Lana Chari. Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai. Premsako Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sridhara Sadguru Bhaktivinoda ki. Sri Sri Radhakrishna Gopi Govardhan Shankund Radhakund Giri Govardhan ki jai. Sri Navadeep Mayapuram ki jai. Sri Mathura Vrindavan ki jai. Vrindavan ki jai. Sri Jagannath Puri Dham ki jai. Gaura Premananda. All glories to the assembled glory. All glories to the assembled glory. All glories to the sacred hero. Today's tourist is actually a whole speaker.
You don't have to wear your mask when you're in class.
It's okay, I will.
Okay.
Today's verse is actually a whole bunch of verses. There's five verses, so we'll just repeat the Sanskrit and the translation for the first one, and then I'll just read the others before going on to the purport. And I've got to find the glasses while I've done that. My glasses down somewhere.
You're wearing.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking through the wrong bit. Sorry. So this is Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 16, Text 26 to 30. So we'll just do Text 26. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Satyam Shochandaya Shanti.
Satyam Shochandaya Shanti.
Tyaga Santosha Arjavam.
Tyaga Santosha Arjavam.
Self-control, even if there is cause of anger. Jagaha. Magnanimity. Santoshaha.
Self-satisfaction.
Arjavam. Straightforwardness. Shamaha. Fixing of the mind. Dhammaha. Control of the sense organs. Sapaha.
Trueness to one's responsibility.
Samyam.
Indiscrimination between friend and foe.
Titiksha.
Tolerance of the offenses of others.
Vipariti.
Indifference to loss and gain.
Shrutam.
Following scriptural injunctions.
So then the other four verses are
Jnanam Rakya Aishwaryam Shoryam Tejobalam Smriti Svatantra Svatantyam Kaushalam Kantir. So I'll just read it. And it's just a lot to keep it easy. Pragalbhyam prashraya shilam sahara kalamaya kandiyam sarayam kichiramanam ete chanay chavadam nityayam chanamadunam chavadyam Tena ham guna patrena, Srinivasena sampratam, Shochami rahitam lokam, Pahmana kalishetam shitam. So the translation of all of those verses is this. In him reside, so it's talking, the previous verse is talking about
talking about principles of the previous verses about the principles of religion, the Dharma, whatever you ever imply to me, that's a trash reply to what this is. Okay. I'll try. Alright. So we're talking about Krishna. Right? In him reside 1. Truthfulness. 2. Cleanliness. 3. Intolerance of another's unhappiness. 4. The power to control anger. 5. Self-satisfaction. 6. Straightforwardness. 7. Steadiness of mind. 8. Control of the sense organs. 9. Responsibility. 10. Equality. 11. Tolerance. 12. Equanimity. 13. Faithfulness. 14. Knowledge. 15. Absence of sense enjoyment. 16. Leadership. 17. Chivalry. 18. Influence. 19. The power to make everything possible. 20. The discharge of proper duty. 21. Complete independence. 22. Dexterity. 23. Fullness of all beauty. 24. Serenity. 25. Kind-heartedness. 26. Ingenuity. 27. Gentility. 28. Magnanimity. 29. Determination. 30. Perfection in all knowledge. 31. Proper execution. 32. Possession of all objects of enjoyment. 33. Joyfulness. 34. Immovability. 35. Fidelity. 36. Fame. 37. Worship. 38. Pridelessness. 39. Being as the personality of Godhead. And 40. Eternity. And many other transcendental qualities which are eternally present and never to be separated from him. That personality of Godhead, the reservoir of all goodness and beauty, Lord Sri Krishna, has now closed his transcendental pastimes on the face of the earth. In his absence, the age of Kali has spread its influence everywhere, so I am sorry to see this condition of existence. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Even if it were possible to count the atoms after smashing the earth into powder, still it would not be possible to estimate the unfathomable transcendental qualities of the Lord. It is said that Lord Anantadev has tried to expound the transcendental qualities of the Supreme Lord with his numberless tongues, and that for numberless years together it has been impossible to estimate the qualities of the Lord. The above statement of the qualities of the Lord is just to estimate his qualities as far as a human being is able to see him. But even if it is so, the above qualities can be divided into many subheadings. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the third quality, intolerance of another's unhappiness, can be subdivided into 1. Protection of the surrendered souls, and 2. Well wishes for the devotees. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord states that he wants every soul to surrender unto him only, and he assures everyone that if one does so, he will give protection from the reactions of all sins. Unsurrendered souls are not devotees of the Lord, and thus there is no particular protection for everyone in general. For the devotees, he has all good wishes, and for those who are actually engaged in loving transcendental service of the Lord, he gives particular attention. He gives direction to such pure devotees to help them discharge their responsibilities on the path back to Godhead. By equality, number 10, the Lord is equally kind to everyone, as the sun is equal in distributing its rays over everyone. Yet, there are many who are unable to take advantage of the sun's rays. Similarly, the Lord says that surrendering unto him is the guarantee for all protection from him. But unfortunate persons are unable to accept this proposition, and therefore they suffer from all material miseries. So even though the Lord is equally well-wishing to everyone, the unfortunate living being, due to bad association only, is unable to accept his instructions in toto. And for this, the Lord is never to be blamed. He is called the well-wisher for the devotees only. He appears to be partial to his devotees. But factually, the matter rests on the living being to accept or reject equal treatment by the Lord. The Lord never deviates from his word of honor. When he gives assurance for protection, the promise is executed in all circumstances. It is the duty of the pure devotee to be fixed in the discharge of the duty entrusted to him by the Lord or the Lord's bona fide representative, the spiritual master. The rest is carried on by the Lord without a break. The responsibility of the Lord is also unique. The Lord has no responsibility because all his work is done by his different appointed energies. But still, he accepts voluntary responsibilities in displaying different roles in his transcendental pastimes. As a boy, he was playing the part of a cowboy. As the son of Nanda Maharaj, he discharged responsibility perfectly. Similarly, when he was playing the part of a Kshatriya as the son of Maharaj Vasudeva, he displayed all the skill of a martially spirited Kshatriya. In almost all cases, the Kshatriya king has to secure a wife by fighting or kidnapping. This sort of behavior for a Kshatriya is praiseworthy in the sense that a Kshatriya must show his power of chivalry to his would-be wife, so that the daughter of a Kshatriya can see the valor of her would-be husband. Even the personality of Godhead, Sri Ram, displayed such a spirit of chivalry during his marriage. He broke the strongest bow, called Paradanur, and achieved the hand of Sita Devi, the mother of all opulence. The Kshatriya spirit is displayed during marriage festivals, and there is nothing wrong in such fighting. Lord Sri Krishna discharged such responsibility fully because although he had more than 16,000 wives, in each and every case he fought like a chivalrous Kshatriya and thus secured a wife. To fight 16,000 times to secure 16,000 wives is certainly possible only for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Similarly, he displayed full responsibility in every action of his different transcendental pastimes. The 14th quality, knowledge, can be further extended into 5 subheadings, namely 1. Intelligence, 2. Gratefulness, 3. Power of understanding the circumstantial environments of place, object, and time, 4. Perfect knowledge of everything, and 5. Knowledge of the self. Only fools are ungrateful to their benefactors. The Lord, however, does not require benefits from anyone besides himself because he is full in himself. Still, he feels benefited by the unalloyed services of his devotees. The Lord feels grateful to his devotees for such unsophisticated, unconditional service and tries to reciprocate it by rendering service, although the devotee also has no such desire in his heart. The transcendental service of the Lord is itself a transcendental benefit for the devotee, and therefore the devotee has nothing to expect from the Lord. On the assertion of the Vedic aphorism, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma, we can understand that the Lord, by the omnipresent rays of his effulgence called Brahma Jyoti, is all-pervading inside or outside of everything, like the omnipresent material sky. And thus, he is also omniscient. As far as the beauty of the Lord is concerned, he has some special features that distinguish him from all other living beings. And over and above that, He has some special, attractive, beautiful features by which he attracts the minds of even Radharani, the supermost beautiful creation of the Lord. He is known, therefore, as Madan Mohan, or one who attracts the mind of even Cupid. Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhu has scrutinizingly analyzed other transcendental qualities of the Lord and affirms that Lord Sri Krishna is the absolute supreme personality of Godhead, Parabrahman. He is omnipotent by his inconceivable energies, and therefore he is the Yogeshwara, or the supreme master of all mystic powers. Being the Yogeshwara, his eternal form is spiritual, a combination of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. The non-devotee class cannot understand the dynamic nature of his knowledge because they are satisfied to reach up to his eternal form of knowledge. All great souls aspire to be equal in knowledge with him. This means that all other knowledge is ever insufficient, flexible, and measurable, whereas the knowledge of the Lord is ever fixed and unfathomable. Srila Suta Goswami affirms in the Bhagavatam that although he was observed by the citizens of Dwarka every day, they were ever increasingly anxious to see him again and again. The living beings can appreciate the qualities of the Lord as the ultimate goal, but they cannot attain the status quo of such equality. This material world is a product of the Mahatattva, which is a state of the Lord's dreaming condition in his yoga nidra, mystic slumber, in the causal ocean. And yet, the whole creation appears to be a factual presentation of his creation. This means that the Lord's dreaming conditions are also factual manifestations. He can therefore bring everything under his transcendental control. And thus, whenever and wherever he does appear, he does so in his fullness. The Lord, being all that is described above, maintains the affairs of the creation, and by his so doing, he gives salvation even to his enemies who are killed by him. He is attractive even to the topmost liberated soul, and thus he is worshipable even by Brahma and Shiva, the greatest of all demigods. Even in his incarnation of Purusha Avatar, he is the Lord of the creative energy. The creative material energy is working under his direction, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 9.10. He is the control switch of the material energy. And to control the material energy in the innumerable universes, he is the root cause of innumerable incarnations in all the universes. There are more than 500,000 incarnations of Manu in only one universe, besides other incarnations in different universes. In the spiritual world, however, beyond the Mahatattva, there is no question of incarnations, but there are plenary expansions of the Lord in different Vaikunthas. The planets in the spiritual sky are at least three times the number of those within the innumerable universes in the Mahatattva. And all the Narayan forms of the Lord are but expansions of his Vasudeva feature. And thus he is Vasudeva, Narayan, and Krishna simultaneously. He is Sri Krishna Govinda Hare Murari, E Nata Narayana Vasudeva, all in one. His qualities, therefore, cannot be counted by anyone, however great one may be. So the translation of these five verses.
Yes, it's optional.
I know. Translation of the five verses basically gives a list of 40 different transcendental qualities possessed by Krishna. And finishes by mentioning that there are many more, but these 40 are just mentioned here to kind of give a taste of Krishna's qualities. So these verses constituting a list of qualities are like many lists that we find in our scriptures. It seems that we have a sort of numerical way of looking at some of these things, perhaps as a way of helping us remember or at least identify specifically these particular characteristics. So these are qualities of Krishna, and although it says in the purport that the devotees are seeking to also achieve these kinds of qualities, that they can never fully realize these particular qualities of Krishna, because although the living entity is the same in quality as the Supreme Lord, there's a difference in quantity, and even the highest, most advanced living entity, Jiva, Lord Brahma, is not as qualified in these different qualities as is Krishna. We have another list, is the list of the qualities of a pure devotee. So the pure devotee is someone that we seek to associate, as devotees we seek to associate with a pure devotee, because it is by their association that we can also then hope to make advancement ourselves. So the 26 qualities of a pure devotee are described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita as follows. Devotees are always merciful, humble, truthful, equal to all, faultless, magnanimous, mild and clean. They are without material possessions, and they perform welfare work for everyone. They are peaceful, surrendered to Krishna, and desireless. They are indifferent to material acquisitions and are fixed in devotional service. They completely control the 6 bad qualities, lust, anger, greed, and so forth. They eat only as much as required, and they are not inebriated. They are respectful, brave, compassionate, and without false prestige. They are friendly, poetic, expert, and silent. So these are the qualities that a pure devotee exhibits, a pure devotee such as Srila Prabhupada. But the devotee doesn't have to work separately to try to acquire, to become, to achieve these different qualities themselves. Because these are, let's take compassionate, right? Let's take compassionate. So that's generally a characteristic that's recognized not just by devotees but maybe even many non-devotees as being a good quality. But how does one become compassionate? Well, you might try to devise different tactics by which we can become compassionate. But actually that won't work. For devotees, what we need to do is simply follow the process that's been given to us, the process of Vaidhi Bhakti. That goes the same for all these different qualities, and including up to discovering whatever our relationship with Krishna is. Prabhupada has taught us that the process is simply, okay, you follow the rules and regulations of Vaidhi Bhakti. And so, by striving to become a good devotee, then these kinds of characteristics will begin to manifest automatically in the devotee. So then, this reminds me of another list that's in the that we find in Prabhupada's books of the kind of the do's and don'ts of devotional service. There's a list of 10 primary things that one does in devotional service, and then a list of 10 things that one should avoid in devotional service. And these come from Lord Chaitanya's discussion with Sanatana Goswami in the Ancha Lila of Chaitanya Charitamrita. But it's not that Lord Chaitanya is kind of making these up on the spot as he's talking to Sanatana Goswami, but as with everything that he teaches, he is drawing on the Vedic tradition. So in that list of 10 things that one should do, it starts with, you know, surrendering to a spiritual master, taking initiation, and serving the spiritual master. But number 9 on that list, which is one that I was looking for information on recently, is to follow Ekadashi. Interestingly enough, it comes from there. And to follow Ekadashi is something that is found in various Puranas as well as other Vedic literature. So this instruction that Lord Chaitanya gave to Sanatana Goswami, he's asking Sanatana Goswami to then write books for the devotees explaining these principles of devotional service that he's telling to Sanatana Goswami. So Sanatana Goswami then writes the Hari Bhakti Vilas, that's summarized in by Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So you find this list in the Nectar of Devotion also. Then Srila Prabhupada also put this same list in the 1970 ISKCON Handbook for Krishna Consciousness. So you find it there. So this is Prabhupada's teaching what Lord Chaitanya has passed down through his followers, the six Goswamis, and it's come down to us to the present day. In other words, we're not following some made-up process, but this is a genuine Vedic traditional process that we're following. So Prabhupada had an enormous task ahead of him when he first came to the West in 1965. In that what he was attempting was pretty much unheard of. Like a single individual bringing an entire culture that was very different from the culture of the people that he was bringing it to. Extremely different, diametrically opposed, in fact. And yet, we are sitting in a temple now surrounded by elements of that culture that he has somehow succeeded in implanting in this foreign land. Right? So such an achievement, actually, if we analyze it, is kind of so monumental that it can only have come about by Krishna's action, that is also supported by the shastras, which predict Prabhupada's coming, predict Lord Chaitanya's appearance, and so on. So we're actually part of something, a major historical event that's taking place. So Prabhupada arrived in the USA when there was a countercultural movement, and Prabhupada used that to help him establish this new culture, what was new culture to the West, the counterculture. So the real counterculture, of course, as demonstrated by the disappearance of the hippie culture that was known as the counterculture back then. The real counterculture, of course, is the Krishna consciousness movement. And it continues to grow, you see more and more how this is happening. Now, what normally happens when immigrants, and if we consider Prabhupada to be an immigrant coming to the United States, so what normally happens when an immigrant group comes from a different culture to somewhere like the USA is that we get a process whereby the culture of those immigrants becomes watered down. It can be even eliminated completely, because there is a recognized pressure exerted by the, you can hardly call Americans indigenous culture, but let's use the term, by the indigenous culture to eliminate this different culture. Okay, if you're coming here, then you need to be like us, right? We don't like you, your way of life. We don't, you know, we like the way we are. We want to stay that way. And so you want to come and live here with us, you have to be like us. You see this kind of attitude all the time amongst certain sections of the population here in the United States, right? So, and that pressure, although it's not necessarily verbalized all the time, it's nevertheless there in a subtle way, very powerfully in a subtle way. And so the immigrant person seeks to try to be like the majority culture in different ways, just so that they can be accepted, they can get jobs, they can, you know, be part of the society. And so over time their original culture tends to be very watered down or lost. For example, Irish Americans or Italian Americans. Okay, we've got some, you know, we eat spaghetti, but there's not a whole lot more of Italian culture that's been become part of American culture. There's some. But if you think of, it works like this, if you think of, there's a physics, simple physics example. If you get a pot of hot water and you put it into a closet and you measure the temperature of the water and you measure the temperature of the air, they're going to be different. The air is cold, the water is hot. You leave it there for a while, right, and the water is a small amount and the air is a bigger amount, right? So it's like the small amount of the immigrant culture and the air is the American culture. So over time, what happens is the two end up being the same temperature. The heat from the water warms up the air, but the end result is the temperature is much more like the temperature of the air than it is the temperature of the hot water that you put into the closet, right? So similarly, let's take for example Chinese culture, right? So the Chinese people move to the United States. So it's not like the Chinese have had no influence on American culture. There are elements of Chinese culture now in American culture, but it's not like we're all talking Chinese, right? For example, Bruce Lee, the famous actor and martial artist. So if you look at American movies before Bruce Lee, if there's a fight scene, it's a good old punch to the jaw. But after Bruce Lee, everybody's like kicking, you know, and doing martial arts type fighting. Somehow or another, they have all this incredible skill. So that's what American movies do. So it's become part of American culture. You see a fight scene in a movie, it's going to be, you know, remnants of Bruce Lee. They're channeling Bruce Lee. But by and large, there's not such a huge influence. We have Chinese restaurants, maybe, and in cities where there's a big Chinese population, maybe there's a Chinese festival. So what? But basically, Americans are not Chinese. And so what Prabhupada was trying to do was to kind of go completely against that current, completely against that force that makes the incoming, the newcomers, assimilate into the existing culture. He's kind of going against that flow, which is not easy, and you don't see it happen. Can you think of another example where that has happened? Not too many. Maybe, you know, perhaps the spread of Christianity back in the day, perhaps. Like that, was like that. So it's a big thing. And why Prabhupada, first of all, had everybody living in temples, because that pressure to conform to American or Western society is very strong, and it's very subtle, and it's there, it's all pervasive, and especially through the media. So on the one hand, we are discouraged from consuming non-devotee media. And on the other hand, we are encouraged to consume Prabhupada's books, and why books are so important in Prabhupada's mission. Why Bhakti Siddhanta told Prabhupada, if you ever get money, print books, and Prabhupada's, the books are the basis. That is the primary means through which Prabhupada has been spreading this Vedic culture in the West, and continues to spread this Vedic culture in the West. And like the communication scholars will tell you, all media is pedagogical, meaning that whatever media you consume, it's teaching you something, whether you realize it or not. Right? And so, you know, when we watch TV, go to the movies, we read non-devotee magazines or books, we are imbibing some of that culture that is behind that particular piece of media, and it's actually encouraging us to be the way that whatever it is portraying is. So this is something that it's important to be aware of constantly, because our goal is to become completely Krishna conscious. This is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So Krishna consciousness means 24/7, every moment, being fully aware of Krishna. Every moment. So that's what we're trying to achieve. And there's a process for doing that, chanting without offences and performing devotional service, and all these different activities that are given in lists here, there, and everywhere in Prabhupada's books. And to the extent that we follow, then we are putting ourselves in that desired zone of Krishna consciousness as much as possible, and we are shutting out the non-Krishna consciousness, but the more we are lax in that process, then the more we fall prey to that influence that is there. Right? That's actually how Maya works on the devotees. Maya is always trying to bring us back out of Krishna consciousness and back into Maya consciousness. And it's particularly tough. It's hard to do because, especially in householder life, when we have to go out to work, when we're interacting with non-devotees all the time, our kids might have to go to non-devotee school, and they see all these other kids, watching this, doing that, playing video games and so on. So they want all these things. And so it's very difficult to not get involved in all of that. And so in householder life, it's very easy for 25 years to just disappear like that, and then you realize, my God, I've just been knowingly drinking poison for 25 years, and now this body's like old, and I've definitely only got a very limited amount of time left. And so, if we're lucky, we can get serious again. But better is that if we somehow or another are able to traverse that period of time without completely losing touch with our spiritual practices and maintaining them to the best of our ability. Because really, we have so little time. This life that we've been given, in which we do have the ability to choose, make choices, and we can choose to try to be Krishna conscious, or we can choose to just do whatever, it doesn't last for long. And as Prabhupada said, even though any act of Krishna consciousness, any piece of devotional service, any chanting that we've done, means that we'll get another chance in a future life to be born in a situation where further progress is possible. There's no guarantee that we'll take advantage of that opportunity, because Maya is so strong, and we may be just carried away then. And so even though Prabhu yesterday was saying that we should be comfortable in this life and so on, but actually in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Abrahma Bhuvanal Loka, that from every planet in the material universe, from the highest down to the lowest, they're all places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. And what we are actually trying to do here is to stop that process of repeated birth and death. And in order to do that, we need to understand what the process is that Prabhupada has given and try our best to follow it. And of course, I'm saying these things because I'm guilty of not being a good devotee for so many years, and now I'm in the position where it's getting late. The hour's getting late, right? And I've got to do my best to kind of make up for all that wasted time. But then, going back to, I mentioned Ekadashi, because Ekadashi is coming up, and Mother Mukha mentioned Ekadashi. So Ekadashi, I was studying Ekadashi recently. At first I was looking at where does this come from, why is Prabhupada telling us to follow Ekadashi? How did he introduce it to the devotees? So it does come from many Puranas, and it came from Lord Chaitanya. who in his childhood pastimes, the cult of his childhood pastimes are Ekadashi oriented, like when he says to beg his mother, please follow Ekadashi. And it's there in the instructions that he passed down through the six Goswamis. And I did a survey. I sent everybody I knew, and all the devotees that I knew, a survey asking them about Ekadashi, what they knew about Ekadashi, if they followed Ekadashi, to what extent they followed Ekadashi. So Prabhupada's instructions on Ekadashi, Prabhupada actually in his New York diary, he mentions that he was following Ekadashi, like he will put an entry, he followed Ekadashi. And even a couple of times, one of the people that were coming to his meetings, he would say, follow Ekadashi, I think it was Paul. I think he was the one who kind of, in the end, went a bit crazy. But anyway, so Prabhupada was, even though Prabhupada was like pretty much, he was on his own, he was still following Ekadashi. And I was thinking, how did he know when it was Ekadashi? So I asked Garga Muni Prabhu, who told me that Prabhupada had copies of the Gaudiya Patrika, which is a Bengali... It was a Navadvipa Patrika. Anyway, so it was a Bengali magazine that I think Prabhupada also, when he was with the League of Devotees, for some time was responsible for publishing it. But anyway, he would get the dates for Ekadashi from this magazine that somebody was sending him from India. And he did introduce it in 26 Second Avenue and told Garga Muni that, because Garga Muni didn't turn up one day to the temple because something to do with his misconception of what Ekadashi meant. So Prabhupada called to him and told him that Ekadashi means feasting and not fasting. So in the beginning, the devotees really appreciated Ekadashi because they would get different preparations on Ekadashi from the normal prasadam. But later on, and that kind of, you know, Prabhupada introduced Ekadashi, as far as I can see, he only mentions it once in Bhagavad Gita and in one of the purports. But it's in that Krishna Consciousness Handbook of 70 or 71, it was published, where it actually says, okay, here's a list, this is what we do, and Ekadashi, we follow Ekadashi. Right? But in his conversations with some devotees later on, like there's a conversation with Jadarani and another one with Tamal Krishna Maharaj, where he says that devotees can follow the full kind of Ekadashi requirements if they're advanced enough and they want to do that. So there's different levels of Ekadashi that Prabhupada introduced, just the basic one that we kind of, most of us follow, and there's the full, the whole thing where it's Nirjal fasting a bit the day before and the day after. But anyway, so it's an important thing, at least to kind of observe Ekadashi in the minimal way. Otherwise Prabhupada wouldn't have introduced it, and it wouldn't be there in that list of 10 things that you do in devotional service. But my survey revealed that while I think I got something like 110 responses to my questionnaire, it was very interesting. And mostly the older devotees who answered my questionnaire followed Ekadashi. And most of those who didn't follow Ekadashi were clearly second generation because that's the nature of the devotees I know, a lot of second generation devotees, because I was a teacher at one time. So there is some following of Ekadashi amongst the younger generation, but not so much. And I wondered, okay, so that tells me that there's, although Prabhupada has established this culture in the West, we actually have to kind of be active in maintaining it and strengthening it even, otherwise it will erode, which is, you know, why the younger people not necessarily following it. They don't see its importance so much. Anyway, so that's where I got from this. Got from this these verses, this nice list of all these wonderful qualities, and in the Vedic culture back way back when people were devotees and exhibited the kind of human version of these qualities, must have been an awesome place to be, or society to be in, because even the harshest non-devotees, many of them will appreciate being in the presence of somebody who exhibits the qualities, for example, that Srila Prabhupada exhibited. Like Prabhupada, I love hearing my wife tell me about the time that she saw Prabhupada in Vrindavan, that he was sitting on the Vyasasana singing Jaya Radha Madhava in the Krishna Balaram Mandir, and she could just see this like glowing golden aura around Prabhupada, and she felt that he was emanating in intense purity, and so much so that she experienced some like ecstatic symptoms, like just spontaneous, like tears. And the pure devotee is like that. The many stories that devotees have told when they, like for example, was it Indrajumna Swami was telling about meeting Prabhupada at the airport, and there was a man, just a random non-devotee guy there, and he's going, "That man, he's shy. And so the Prabhupada wasn't doing anything other than just being there, but yet people appreciate his purity simply because that's the nature of somebody who is so pure. So imagine a society of people whose level of purity is kind of somewhere near like that, you know. But instead, what we've got is a society which is based on the very things that Prabhupada tells us, makes us promise that we'll give up, actually, when we take initiation. We live in a society that is based on meat-eating, gambling, intoxication and illicit sex in every permutation you can think of. The society is riddled with it, and that's what it's based on. And so that's again another example of the enormity of what Prabhupada was taking on. You know, he wasn't understating the fact when he was praying to Krishna, you know, when he first came to the States, in that poem he wrote, you know, the Make Me Dance poem. He could see how can I make these people take to Krishna consciousness when it's just so degraded, this society that we're in. Anyway, Anybody got anything to add to this? Yes. You know, got a grudge for it.
I really appreciated your class when you were talking about the different cultures coming and really what was gleaned from it, like mostly, you know, Italian food or Chinese food, except for Bruce Lee when he, you know, brought in the culture of martial arts. And I was thinking how Prabhupada, due to his complete purity and strong faith, was able to infiltrate to such an extent that, you know, when he first came, hardly anyone was vegetarian. That was very, very weird.
Really?
And now it's completely, on the airplanes, there's like vegetarian and vegan options, and
yes,
it's just very mainstream. And the same thing with yoga.
Mm-hmm.
It's also become very mainstream. That's all Prabhupada's influence, you know, that all that. And kirtan, too.
Yes.
Has become very mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
So it really made me think of that. And also, I was thinking how Ekadashi, you know, people don't follow it. You know, some people don't follow, but they don't realize the blessings that come from it. It's like, you know, you'll work so many hours thinking, maybe if I work this long, I'll be able to save this much money, but you're not really understanding the blessings that come, you know, material and spiritual from following this process. So that's something too, that if it's understood, even it may be initially a material motivation, it's important to know that, just to follow it.
Yeah, in the Puranas, the description, and in the Garga Samhita, the Dhanavir Maharaj published a translation of that Shastra, which has a big section on Ekadashi. So all these ancient descriptions of the benefits of Ekadashi are very much in the Karma Kanda sort of mood. A lot of it is like that. It's not all of it, but that's definitely there. And in fact, one devotee that I was talking to about Ekadashi, she's a big proponent of Ekadashi, and she does a full Nirjal. But in the beginning, she said the reason she started following Ekadashi was because of all these benefits that seem to be kind of available, you know. And so she got serious about Ekadashi when she was about 14, and started realizing that you do get these kind of benefits, you know, what she was striving for, she was achieving, and she felt because of her observance of Ekadashi. But then she started to follow Ekadashi for spiritual reasons, and then she started to perceive tangible spiritual benefits from following Ekadashi, and that's why she follows Ekadashi now, not for the material benefits, even though she still says she still gets material benefits, but that's not her goal. But to follow to the extent that she does is very difficult. She's chants 64 rounds and does the whole Nirjal thing, and she has her day kind of very carefully planned out so that she can do that.
But since she's 14?
Since she was 14, yeah.
She's in England?
No, she's in the USA, but she's in her, like, about 40 now. Yeah, she's a star. An Ekadashi star. Yes, gotta go through it.
So, the story of Garga Muni, it was in New York, and they were taking prasad in the morning on Ekadashi. And the Prabhupada said, "Where's Garga Muni?" And the devotee said, "Oh, he's fasting, Prabhupada." And so Prabhupada said, "Bring him here." So then they brought Garga Muni. The Prabhupada said, "So, you know," and he said, "Oh, I'm fasting because it's Ekadashi." And the Prabhupada said, like you said, Prabhupada said, Ekadashi means feasting. In other words, Prabhupada's actually given us mercy because we're you know, given up everything that we, you know, were attached to, meaningless sex, intoxication, and gambling, you know, we're giving it up, which is hard. And so then the prophet's having a mercy, you know, saying feasting.
Right.
So we used to have opulent prasad on the Kadashi, actually, especially in Los Angeles. They had a whole room just for a Kadashi prasad. They used to sell it, I mean, whole room, and it was like full of opulent things. Like Ram Dass and his wife made it. Mm. You know, you remember, he was head pujari, and he had this big feast, and we used to buy the prasad on Kadashi. Remember, Krishna?
So then...
Yeah, well, and I was reading Yamuna's original cookbook, which is actually like a shasta. I mean, she's got all comments from Prabhupada in there, but there are specific things, specific preps that she says about this is for Ekadashi, and she's very, very detailed. But it's clear, I mean, Prabhupada took prasadam on Ekadashi. It's not like Prabhupada did the Nirjal fast, or at least most of the time.
I see it. In my book, it was there, especially because you could see the drinking plate, and yeah, he takes it.
Yes,
thank you, Sir Prabhu. The only problem is now that we've gotten used to having the feast on Ekadashi, because those days we used to do a lot of sankirtan, book distribution all day, so if we didn't eat nicely, we won't have energy.
Yeah.
And now, in the name of, you know, the kids have to do Ekadashi, so we cook nice things all day, but then we get used to having the feast also, and then we have to have pizza, and we have to have Ekadashi bread, and we have to have so many things.
Yes, no, that's
get used to
the devotee who I was mentioning follows Nirjala Kadashi now. She said when she was a young mother, she used to really cook up a feast on a Kadashi, and she even got to the point where she felt she was really indulging, like in on a Kadashi rather than you know, fasting in any way, because of all the nice preparations that can be made.
Prabhupada would say, real Ekadashi, he didn't enforce it, but actually he said, he was, you know, merciful, but actually he said, real Ekadashi means fasting and chanting and no other business.
Yeah.
Except, Prabhupada would say, if you're going on book distribution, you know, that's the priority, and so you can...
Actually, I'm glad you mentioned that, actually, because I forgot to also mention that Lord Chaitanya's...
asked his mother.
No, but at Srivas Thakur's house, is it, where they stayed up all night chanting on Ekadashi?
Yeah,
so that's also, part of it.
And Lord Chaitanya asked his mother to follow Ekadashi. And also, you know, but the thing is, if you ever did a Nirjal, you actually feel really good the next day. It improves your whole body. All your senses get more stronger, so you can...
Well, there's also some preparation, bodily preparation, as you've done the day before and the day after, by eating less and eating...
And you know Trivubhanath, right?
Yeah.
So Trivunath used to do a Nirjal every Ekadashi.
Really?
And he had so much shakti from that, you know. He was tremendous, you know.
Yeah, Trivunath.
Just a man.
A lot of people do it and they don't get much food.